Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce. Rob and Chris joining me as always. We got some stuff to talk about today. We have In Your House to look back at. We have a major debut on Raw, as some would say. We have a return for one former NXT champion. We're also going to talk about who we would send, what five superstars we would send from WWE to AEW and from AEW to the Federation. We're also going to go back to the year 2005, find out who the third and fourth draft picks are, one for Raw and SmackDown, respectively. Now, let's start with the pay-per-view we got coming up this weekend. Hell in a Cell. I know I call it Extreme Rules a lot on the top 25. I keep fucking forgetting because they flipped around the pay-per-views. But we got Hell in a Cell this upcoming Sunday live from the Thunderdome. It is, fingers crossed, the very last Thunderdome / non-crowd attended show we have pay-per-view-wise for the Federation.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, you know, that alone is great. You know, hopefully we never have to go back to that. You know, they start pay-per-views at 7 Central again now as of last weekend, which was good, very good. Annoying. But, you know,
You prefer the 6 Central.
I do. Then you're out of there earlier, but whatever. Doesn't matter. I mean, In Your House was over by, you know, 9 or whatever. But, yeah, no, Hell in a Cell, only 5 matches right now. I assume they'll add one or two more, but they've been keeping it short, so... You know, yeah. They kind of have everything they need on the card at the moment.
By the way, since you mentioned that, like, I know SummerSlam, which August 21st, Las Vegas, Nevada, all three of us will be there. Holler at us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know SummerSlam starts at 8 o'clock Eastern time, 5 Pacific. That shit's definitely going long. We're on the West Coast. It's warm. It's going to be nice out once it finally lets out. It's going to go long.
I'm cool. I mean, no, I don't care. I haven't done anything in, you know, a year and a half. I don't care. If it goes long, that's fine, you know.
Do we know of any, because I know GCW is doing a show, I forget where, but we know of any other independent shows going on that week?
None that I know of. Yeah, I don't think yet. No. If I had to make a wager on if TakeOver ends up being out there or not, I would say it probably will on Sunday. Because, you know, they're scheduled for Orlando right now, but obviously they can move that.
Well, I know they have a super show that night. Oh god, Embiid just stuffed who was 15? Is that Capella?
Yeah.
He just stuffed the hell out of him. Good lord. I know that they're running Denver as a super show the night after, but it would make sense if the kid stuck around for a takeover, you know. Mm-hmm. I would enjoy that very much.
Well, because I mean, you know, I think people are gonna stick around. I know we're going to be in Vegas till Monday night. So if there's a takeover, you know, they give us something to do on Sunday, I would appreciate that. I think enough people will stick
around. There'll be something to do in Vegas, no matter if there's a takeover.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
No, I know. But yeah, I mean, if the takeover's in Orlando, I'm not gonna like watch it in the hotel at Vegas. You know, so if it's in Vegas, I'll go to it. So that'd be cool. No, you know, no other independent shows. I don't know if too many are, you know, even up and running at this point. I know GCW has been.
I think they're slowly coming back. I know there's a Future Stars of Wrestling show that's happening, I want to say Friday. That was a show where it was supposed to be Chris Bay versus Leo Rush.
And oh, wow.
Leo Rush dropped out, so he's going to finish his end up in his New Japan commitments and then retire. Mm-hmm. So that got replaced with Chris Bay and somebody else. But they did like a massive show somewhere downtown last month that Moxley showed up to. I forgot the main event. It was Moxley and a pretty big independent name in a main event.
Oh, damn.
So they've been slowly coming back, which, by the way, speaking of John Moxley, congratulations to Mox and Renee on the birth of their daughter.
Yes.
Wrestling Twitter's terrible, but we know you guys are awesome, so congratulations. But yeah, SummerSlam is going to be badass. We're all going to be out there. If you guys are out there, let us know at Cameron Santo, at RobertNeedle31, at Chris M. Novak on Twitter. Let's go into Hell in a Cell. I had the card up and then I started looking for GCW indie shows because I'm kind of in that mode. I'm trying to get Friday off, so we'll see. Hell in a Cell, like I said, the very last pay-per-view at the Yuengling Center for the future. I'll get another one. I'll get a bullshit pay-per-view eventually. It's the 13th Hell in a Cell, the first to be held in the month of June. It's technically a fall-October pay-per-view, but Vince wanted some carnage before we got back on the streets. So, appreciation, Vinnie Mac. Let's start off with a singles match between Alexa Bliss and Shayna Baszler. I caught half of Raw, so I didn't see their interaction. I'm not sure like how that progressed. I'm just going to say that Shayna chokes her out. Because that's exactly what should happen.
I'm particularly intrigued. So they kept Shayna off TV.
Good.
And Alexa faced Nia. The thing that I found particularly interesting about it is that it was wrestled like a normal match with no like smoke and mirrors or anything, which was particularly different from the Alexa matches that we've seen, obviously, over the last almost a calendar year at this point since she sided with the Fiend. So yeah, it was wrestled like a normal Alexa match, and I have no idea what to expect for Alexa Shayna. I don't even know.
I guess we could expect some wonkiness because this is gonna be one of the very last times they would do something to this degree of wonky.
Yeah, I think what they would be better served doing is just trying to make it like a normal match, but also have the theatrics mixed in and not just have it be heavily leaned towards the theatrics, I think. That would probably be what would be best for everybody here. As far as a winner, I think it's more of a coin flip than anything. I could see it going either way. I will pick Alexa just to be different from you, Pierce. So, Rob, you have to break the tie.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends if they're going to keep this Alexa stuff going.
They probably
when they get back to having fans.
They will.
Maybe.
I mean, they have the Fiend stuff going. Why wouldn't they have the Alexa stuff
going? Well, it's not exactly the same. But yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a lot less believable with Alexa than it is. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably have Alexa win and just kind of keep it going for the next month or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they stick with it, you know, when the fans get back. But I would like to see Shayna win, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I think it would hurt Shayna if she lost the singles match. And, you know, Alexa's not going to hurt if she takes an L.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Let's do the women's title matches first. Bianca Belair defending her SmackDown Women's Championship in a singles match against Bayley. Bianca should retain.
This is a gimme.
It's easily a gimme. I'm just glad to see the two of them together. They had a really nice match. At Redacted Backlash, we keep this feud going. I honestly thought that they might save this match for the couple weeks ago before, you know, Bayley had a rash of really good and funny segments.
Yeah,
that's gonna be a great meme, her and Seth. It's so good. I thought they would save this until Money in the Bank, but I can understand if they want Bayley in that Money in the Bank match, then you hold that off. Or you let her be in that and you do the singles match here. So, but it's not much to talk about here. Bianca's going to win. She's going to retain.
Yeah, exactly. Bianca's going to win, and Bayley most likely should be in Money in the Bank because they don't have anybody on SmackDown besides her to really be
that too.
Like, yeah. Legit incredible. So that would be fine for me. But what I would prefer after this is that, I know this is going to sound interesting for me, I guess, but I would prefer that this be her last title match for a very long time, as long as she's on SmackDown. If she gets drafted to Raw in the late summer, early fall, fine, but this is it. You don't need to do the triple threat idea that people have put out there. She's
it'd be a good match.
Bayley, Sasha, and Bianca. But like, I don't care. Match.
So triple B's.
Just do Sasha Bianca again.
Well, you don't need to just rerun that though.
Yeah. Sure you do. It's easy. Yes, well, you do.
It's easy, but
Bayley doesn't provide any other elements for me because all she's really done over the last calendar year is lose anyway. Another title match that she get pinned in anyway?
Well, see, my argument is like, okay, it is easy, but you just did that to main event the first show back with fans. I don't think you need a repeat of a match that you already had at WrestleMania at SummerSlam.
Do you think that they run it at Money in the Bank then? Because I could see that happening too.
Here's my thing.
I think Sasha finds a way to come back at Money in the Bank, and you do that either that match or a triple threat at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
I just don't see
the point in trotting Bayley out for another title match because that she's going to lose anyway.
I don't think you're going to keep her off WrestleMania and SummerSlam. That would be surprising.
Who says they have to keep her off SummerSlam? If they're doing, they could put her on the card with anything. Who cares?
I would prefer that than just a bullshit match against
Bayley against Carmella or something. I mean,
not to be whatever, but like if you have Becky ready, go for it.
Okay. Sure.
Also, and if you're gonna trot out that this is gonna be a big deal, grab a legend for her to face. What's the harm in that?
Fair.
If you want to do two power feuds on SmackDown with your women, go for it.
Is there a woman's legend who can still go?
Lita, Trish, anybody.
Trish seems like
get anybody.
Trish,
who cares?
Trish seems pretty
Trish
adamant.
Trish continues to retire. So like I'm Lita probably because yeah, there's a drawback with her and Lita. But like yeah, how much can Lita go?
Yeah,
I guess is my question because I don't want that if it's a fucking 6-minute match.
Yeah, I don't know that I would trust Lita to do a singles match at this point. Trish, maybe she seemed adamant that she was done, you know, after she faced Charlotte. But
what about Bayley and Beth?
I'd be fine with that too. That'd be good. That'd be great. Do that.
And I'm not the biggest Beth Phoenix fan, never was, but like, okay, there's a legend there that could still go.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Well, and I mean, the interesting thing about Backlash is they're going to call some people in. They're going to do some stuff. Like it's impossible to predict right now. Yeah.
Backlash.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to call people in. So, you know.
Yeah. So it's, but no, I think Bianca's going to win this match though. It seems pretty obvious.
Yeah. It's obvious.
I don't know that the Raw women's title match is as obvious just because whenever you have Charlotte in a match, you know, I think Rhea's been fine. I don't know that they necessarily know what they're doing with her, but
I'm kind of torn too because I feel like if you do take the belt off of Rhea, you kill her momentum. But
yes, it's, you do.
Okay, this is the only reason I'd be up for it. Charlotte wins. You run this back at Allegiant Stadium, and then Rhea gets her big pop win the way that she wanted to in Tampa.
Yeah.
And okay, it's she's down 1-2, but she won, I guess, the big one, the match that actually mattered, the one that was in front of the fans. So I'm going to go with Charlotte here and hope for that. I'm not the biggest Rhea Ripley fan right now. I don't think she's had a great reign, but, you know, give her somebody else like Charlotte. She had a really good match with Charlotte at WrestleMania. I know people were saying it was a classic, like, yo, relax. But it was a really good match at WrestleMania in front of no crowd. Now let's see what you're able to, you know, get this match out of the way. And then, you know, if you want to see the kind of momentum that you can build it's not going to be full. Like, what's the official capacity on that? Like 48K?
Yeah, I mean, something like that. They have, like, I don't want to say it's a whole half of the stadium. They have
It feels like up, a little bit further than half, maybe going back to the 25, 30 yard line.
Yeah, like that side that the window facing the strip is on, I think that's going to be curtained off, they said. So like...
Oh, that's bogus. That's yeah. Gonna be beautiful sun. Ugh.
And it looks like the ring is at about like the 30, and it, I think it goes to probably a little bit past midfield is yeah. kind of where the cutoff is going to be, because I think the last sections were like 107 or whatever. So yeah, kind of, you know, right over there. But yeah, and it does kind of suck that they're having that curtained off, because it is going to be a really cool look. But yeah, probably about 50,000, I would say, which is probably a record for SummerSlam since Wembley.
Yeah, what was Wembley? Let's see.
If I had to guess, like 65.
It had to be in the 60s. Reported as having 80,000. Oh, that was WrestleMania. Da, da, da. How do I get down?
No, it was 80,000 through 55.
Yeah, sorry. I was looking at the WrestleMania 29 number.
Yep. So probably somewhere
in the Wembley.
Probably somewhere close to 70. Yeah, but still, I mean, it's a lot of people, and it's going to be, you know. It's going to be a lot of people at this one, too. So it's going to be cool.
I'm going to predict 66. She said in the 70s, I'm going to predict 66.
Yeah.
And that's the lying total, by the way. It's not the true total.
But, I mean, getting back to Rhea and Charlotte, I think if you're going to have a title change in this show, which you don't necessarily have to, but that's kind of how I always treat it, it's going to be in this match. Like, because it's I don't think Drew's going to win, and I, you know, Roman's not going to lose. So
no. Is that... Is that Charlotte's 11th title reign if she wins?
It would be 14.
14?
14.
God damn. Well,
I mean, you know, they were passing the belt back and forth.
She's literally two away from her father.
Yep. But it's interesting because they're just considering, they're consolidating everything.
They're considering the NXT's titles?
Yeah, so it's two-time NXT Women's Champion, one-time Divas Champion, so that's three. Four-time Raw Women's Champion, so that's seven. And, well, five-time SmackDown Women's Champion, so that'd be 12. I guess they're, for whatever reason, including the women's tag titles, which is weird. Not how it should work. So it would actually be 13, but for whatever reason, they're going to count.
Well, they kind of actually held the Raw Women's title.
Last time she held the Raw Women's title was, I want to say 2017. It's been 4 years.
Yes,
because she wasn't on.
So her last title was when she had the NXT Women's title.
Yes,
yeah.
And then before that, she was doing the stuff on SmackDown with Bayley, and then yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yes, I can't believe it's been that long since Charlotte held a title, but also wasn't counting her now two NXT championship reigns.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they do it with Rick. They count all of them.
Yeah, they count.
They don't count all of them.
Like, well, no. Yeah, all of them would be like 19, I think, or whatever.
There's a couple that are missing off in the lineage, but in the WWE realm of things, it's 16. I can't believe she's two away. Jesus, oh my God, she's. I do think the shelf life on Ashley Fleer as a wrestler is dimming. You know, I do think that she's going to want to start a family. Her and Andrade are going to want to start a family, and if. Yo, you want her to beat that streak? Although, like, it'd be kind of wild if she beat her dad's streak before Cena did. It'd be very wild, but it's possible.
Yes.
It's very possible. Then, hey, if she accumulates another title win here, I'm not mad at it. You forget that she's 35, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's only so much time that she's going to have, and so eventually she's going to want to go away and it's our family. What was Trish when she left? I want to say Trish was in her early 30s.
Yeah, she was not very old at all.
No, she was not very old at all, no.
She wasn't even 31. She was 30.
Yeah.
She left at 30. So, you know, that's going to be something that a lot of the girls that we see now are going to have to want to think about. It's what Becky's thinking about now. Like, you know, people wonder why we haven't seen Becky. And it's been, what, 6 or 7 months since she gave birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's enjoying the fuck out of motherhood. You know, she's enjoying the fuck out of being a family with Seth. Like, this is the dilemma that the women's wrestlers in the WWE and in AEW kind of have to deal with. That, you know, we take for granted because we're so focused on, you know, what does Jon Moxley have going on next? What does Seth Rollins have going on next? That we forget that, you know, those guys can really, you know, go at full speed until 40-ish,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the same way. So anyway, I said I'm going with Charlotte. I'm going to stick with that. Now let's jump over to the men's. We got two Hell in a Cells for the men's. I don't know why we don't have a single Hell in a Cell for the women, but hey, it is what it is. Would you do, okay, Chris, would you do Bianca Bailey and Hell in a Cell and then that's it? Like, let's say that's completely it.
I would rather do a different gimmick.
Okay.
I just don't think that they had enough juice behind this. I know they obviously had, like, you know, the segment per week or whatever, but, like, besides that,
well,
they weren't throwing fat. They weren't throwing 97. They were throwing, like, 92, 93.
Well, Bailey was in another Hell in a Cell match. Didn't have enough juice behind it.
Sure it did.
You know. Wow.
That was seven years in the making.
Are you almost serious? Okay. Okay.
That had plenty of, I mean, the feud itself was weird, but
yeah,
they had
the match
plenty
was
of
really, really fucking good.
Oh yeah,
yeah, the they had good, plenty yeah. of substance behind it for people to be enjoyed. I mean, but I would not. No, if they did like False Count Anywhere or something for that, I would have been fine with that. But I'm surprised that they're just doing another straight up singles. But I would not have. I would have kind of just been like, okay, whatever. To another Hell in a Cell between them.
You thought I was gonna say between Bailey and Sasha?
No, I mean Bailey and Bianca.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's jump over to the men's sides. Let's start on SmackDown, where Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against Rey Mysterio. This is going to be a mauling. Love you, Rey, but just like a couple years ago in Chicago, you and your son are going to die in a championship match.
Yeah, and Dominic might be dead already.
Fair point. The corpse of Dominic.
Yeah, you know.
See, I have a prediction about this match in particular. I think Roman's going to win. I think it's going to happen is sort of similar to what happened in the Roman versus Jay Hell in a Cell match back in October. It's been a point of emphasis so far in this feud that, you know, it just really started ramping up 2 weeks ago that Dom has been getting his ass kicked, right?
Yeah.
So Roman came in, he interrupted the tag title match and he beat the crap out of both of them, but he specifically targeted Dominic and, you know, injured him pretty badly. Then last week, of course, he did the same thing. He powerbombed him literally out of the ring and threw him out of the ring. And, you know, you had Ray getting beat up and then he was, you know, after Dom got hurt, he was like, you know, crying over him. So what I think is going to happen, I think Dom's going to get involved here. I think everybody's going to get involved here. Every major player here. So you're going to see Ray, you're going to see Dom, you're going to see Roman, obviously. You're going to see both Usos. I think Jimmy finally comes over to the bloodline. And I think what's going to happen is Dom's going to get whooped and Ray's going to be like held up or whatever. And he's going to basically give up to save his son. So Roman will retain that way. And then you can have an actual match between the two of them the next month at Money in the Bank in front of fans where Roman can win decisively again.
Yeah.
That's how I see this go.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Not a bad prediction.
No, that seems about right.
Cause they're always, cause you have to realize with everything that they've done with Roman, it's all been very meticulous. It's all been very story driven. Everything that he's pretty much done so far has just been following a certain pathway here.
He's on the sacred timeline.
Yes.
And you know, everybody else are these little branches. Yes. But what Roman's story is what drives the product. It's kind of like if you tune into your favorite soap opera, you know, you got people going in which way or the other, but you have your main story. You have your main storyline that pushes the narrative and drives everything else. And they vary. Okay. Yeah. They do deter from that a little bit. I mean, it's fucking soap operas. But Roman Reigns is what drives the narrative on SmackDown. Everybody else can do whatever the fuck, you know, happens. And, you know, 1 week it's, you know, it you kind of feel like you see the vision, but it just deters into something else. With Roman, they've planned whatever his future is out perfectly. You know, within who he's taking care of, who is wrestling. And I do think that, like,
you know, what Chris just mentioned, the similarity or the similarities in how he thinks this Hell in a Cell match will happen with the last one, and then just even with the storyline, you know, he's had a different motivation. It always feels like Roman's motivation, it's solid, and right now it's family, and it's going to kill and squeeze the life out of what you love most to get you to acknowledge me. And you know, he did that with Jim. God, I hate that. I can't fucking get them. Jay.
Yes.
Did that with Jay and Jimmy, and it was Jimmy that was the one to it was Jay. Fuck, wait, who did he fuck up? He fucked up the brother that wasn't in the match, right?
No, because Jimmy was the one who's like, I think, threw the towel in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So yeah, Jimmy was the one who threw the towel in because he saw his brother getting maimed and destroyed, and you know, now you're seeing that with Ray and Dominic, and this is going to be a very well told, not a main event. I think it's going to open the show. This is going to be.
I wouldn't be surprised if it did that too. So
yeah,
it's going to be well told, hot open to the show. I can't wait. Last chance Hell in a Cell, the WWE Championship. If Drew McIntyre does not beat Bobby Lashley, he will not have another opportunity for Bobby Lashley's WWE Championship. Bobby's winning. I'm perfectly fine with this main eventing and Bobby winning and Bobby continuing his run through the rest of the Raw roster going into SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, because it seems like they're setting up a Kofi match for Money in the Bank, which is good. I'm fine with that.
And yeah.
I don't know.
That's going to be very hot for Kofi, so.
Oh, yeah. Like I don't know what's left for SummerSlam at that point. Well, I do, but
You beg for it every Monday. You know it's
he's not currently scheduled to be there, so.
So are you just tempering your expectations to not get let down?
Yes.
Are you doing the cup thing to do?
Exactly. But yeah, no, I think Lashley's gonna win and Drew's gonna move on to something, you know, out of the title picture. It sucks for him. He was a pretty good champion for you know, the majority of the pandemic, but I think people are getting a little tired of him.
Well, my question is, I'm totally fine with Drew taking a backward step, but my question is, what's next for Drew if Drew loses on Sunday? And that's specifically looking at SummerSlam. What does he do at SummerSlam? I'm okay if he doesn't challenge Bobby Lashley anymore because I think he's going to SmackDown, honestly. But hey, he's got to have a big match at SummerSlam.
Yeah, that's the quandary you run into is the fact. Well, it's not that, you know, oh, him being champion erases that. Like obviously, it's the quandary of Raw.
Yeah,
and the fact that they don't really have anything really going right now, so that's my thing here, and that's what I'm wondering, because Drew's obviously the top face, and first of all, I'm not buying into this. People are tired of Drew thing. It's the same. We have no idea who
we do with every single baby face that becomes champion. Yeah, I agree.
It's also, people were saying that about Becky, and then she got cheered in every arena that she went to every single week.
Yeah.
We have no idea who the viewing audience at large is tired of, who they approve of, and who they don't approve
of.
We're all just shouting into our echo chambers, unless you're Jackson Ryker, because he sucks.
He fucking sucks. I mean, it's very appropriate that he was looking at the U.S. championship.
Yeah.
But I will say this about Drew. When they do press, and, you know, we spoke to Nick Khan earlier today. He's a Las Vegas native. I didn't know that. Drew is also another one of those guys that they put out there to do these press tours. I mean, like, I'm not just saying that just because Drew will do the things that he's told or is asked of him to help promote the brand. But, you know, you watch these morning shows, you watch, you know, if you're just a regular viewer of WWE, they're putting Drew McIntyre out as that guy to get casual viewers, to get people that don't necessarily watch the company because he's a charismatic, well-looking dude. Like, he is that guy. Mm-hmm. And will WWE, or sorry, will the fans give him that love once we get back into the fold? I think so. I try not to put too much stock into what wrestling Twitter thinks, not just because wrestling Twitter is fucking stupid, but because Twitter is such a small, you know, piece of the viewing puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, so like the fucking teenagers, college kids might be tired of Drew, and yeah, Drew might be kind of laxing. But that don't mean that when we get back in the fans, that crowd won't cheer the hell out of Drew. And we'll find out in about a month from now when they finally get back on the road how they feel about Drew. And I think it's going to be positive because they put him in that position for it to be positive.
I would agree. And I honestly, apart from like maybe a select few, a very, very select few, I think everybody is going to get mostly positive reactions. I don't think anybody is going to get like booed out of the building unless it's like Eva Marie or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone is going to be really rejected. I think everybody who attends these events, these shows that are coming up, these families that haven't been able to get out there, the kids who have been wanting to see these people in person again, they're all going to be happy to be there.
Well, from what I've been hearing, they're not even selling any tickets. So, you know.
Yawn.
Oh, yeah, AEW's selling them out.
No, I mean, you have a point. I just, you know, as far as what you do with Drew after this, you know, I
guess you figure that out when you have to figure that out.
I mean, you get a feud with Jinder. I don't think you get that all the way to SummerSlam.
Jinder hasn't even been on TV in like four or five weeks. So I'm not even.
What the fuck are they doing with that? AJ, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, because they're doing the tag title stuff, so I mean, Drew would have to
AJ link up with
somebody.
That too. Who does AJ truly have beef with? Or yeah, who does AJ have beef with that he could probably team up with?
Yeah, I mean that's really the question here. It's trying to figure that out.
Because again, this is just the state of Raw. So.
Well, yeah, fair point. let's talk about In Your House. It went. I wasn't too crazy for the main event, and it wasn't just because of the finish. I just think, you know, four of those five guys can go. Obviously, Cross being the one that's lagging so far behind the other four. It just didn't have the chemistry that I hoped it would. It didn't get off the ground the way I hoped it would. Like, and then Cross is just so bad that it is what it is.
That motherfucker didn't have five.
All right. Let's talk about it. How upset are you? Let's just say that Brock Lesnar has the greatest F5 of all time. I don't know.
I mean,
then yeah. Who's second and who's third between Karrion Kross and Matt Morgan?
I mean, at least Matt Morgan falls backwards. Kross just stood there.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Like, I don't know. No one else should do it. Like,
it should be a protected finisher. Yeah.
It should be a protected finisher, protected move in general.
I know Io does a 619. She's good at it. That's fine. I mean, but I can't think of another move that also, only one person does. But, yeah. You know.
I mean, Io can get away with it because she's Io Shirai.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Also, the move, I mean, it's, you know, known as something else elsewhere.
Yes.
As pointed out by Mauro Ranallo oftentimes, it's a Tiger Faint Kick. Plenty of other people have done it before besides Ray. Ray popularized it in this country.
Yeah, I'm not sure an F5 has been a move that's been done regularly.
Not really at all. I mean, it's only been Brock and Matt Morgan and the one time the other night.
Well, I mean, in the WWE sphere, though, like, how long did it take for anybody to do a Stone Cold Stunner? Like, Cena didn't start doing it until maybe 2010, 2011-ish. And it was still like a springboard, so it was his own little
variation. Yeah. So, I mean, the first person to really, like, do it straight up is Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he's still wrestling. Why are we giving away the finisher of one of our biggest stars while he's still wrestling? That's stupid. That was dumb.
But no, I mean, you know, I think the show overall was a step back, which you don't expect for a takeover.
It was just kind of there.
Yeah. Like, you know, I think the first match was good. It kind of felt like Zion and Mercedes got too much time, and then Mercedes did a beatdown after, so it's like, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
It was that she was just
irritated. It was 7:40. So I think just like everything else around it was long, but
yeah,
yeah.
I thought Raquel and Ember went a little bit too long. I just,
I think Ember did a very good job in
that
match.
She did, she did the best she did she could. A good job of, yeah, good job of carrying that match.
And then, you know, I liked the main event. They let the four guys who can actually work for most of it.
Yeah.
And Cross just kind of came in segments. And I guess that's what you have to do if you're going to, you know, insist on keeping him around.
Did either of you two notice that, like, the four of them, like, were laying it really in on Karrion?
Well, yeah, you know.
Like, with some of the stuff that they were doing, like, when I think Dunn was, like, choking him, like,
I don't think he's a person that too many people like. And I mean,
no, I mean, what gives you that idea? Is it the idea that they literally had everyone run him down in the weeks coming up?
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus Christ.
Like,
real quick, we're going to keep on talking about Karrion Kross. What y'all think of the opener?
I thought it was very good.
It was good, yeah.
You know, I know we kind of disagreed about how the result should have went, but I think Legado del Fantasma is still fine. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know who is next up for Bronson Reed, but with that title...
Well, Santos said that he wanted him one-on-one.
Yeah. No, there we go.
Yeah, so they're going to do that.
And then it looks
probably like, at the Great American Bash special that they're doing on July 6th.
And then it looks like MSK is facing Thatcher and Ciampa.
Yeah, which is fine. So. Yeah,
that's going to be a really good match. Yeah, yeah. I like Thatcher a lot better in a tag team with Ciampa.
Likewise.
Yeah,
I think this is a good spot for Ciampa right now too.
It's been good. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I didn't enjoy In Your House that much. I thought it was. The TV this week was one of their best since moving to USA Network.
Yes.
So they made up for it. And that's the thing that they do that, you know, the two main shows don't always do is they reset after pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. They reset very well. I caught the main event, so I didn't catch everything else. I did catch the earlier stuff with who we're going to talk about in just a bit. But LA Knight and Cameron Grimes, I did finally get a glimpse of LA Knight putting it into to Ted DiBiase. And yo, shout out to Ted DiBiase for still being able to take a bump, man. Like, that's rad. That's really rad. But LA Knight is the new $1 million champ. I mean, that's a good call, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have him keep feuding for that. Cameron Grimes is actually very over as a babyface.
Yes, which he is.
Yes.
Didn't realize until TV yesterday.
I didn't realize that he could do either because he's such a great asshole in person. Well, not in person, like as an actual person, but like in when you're watching him, he's such a good asshole that he could get over with this to the moon shit. And I remember when it started, I'm just like, it's not hitting. It's very much a character, but he leaned into it. He leaned the hell into it, and then when the stoinks shit happened in the real world, he did what good wrestlers do, and that's take topical things and then take it, quote unquote, to the moon. So he's done an awesome job. I'm so happy he's over as a babyface. He did wonderful work as the baby in this match.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like I said, like the pay-per-view was what it was, but...
Sometimes takeovers are, you know...
Meh.
They're not always going to be what, you know, like Takeover New Orleans or, you know, all the Brooklyn ones. Sometimes you're Takeover the end of the beginning. It is what it is. And they followed up Stand and Deliver, which every match literally delivered.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of the thing is, you know, if you don't care for the main men's or women's champion and they're going to win, you know, you're going to have a sour taste for.
You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it kind of is what it is. I mean. I think Great American Bash will be good. They're doing Cole and O'Reilly again.
Yep, which will be good.
Yeah.
We don't know the rest of the card.
No, but yeah.
O'Reilly Kushida next week will be.
That'll be fun.
Fun as hell. Which I actually do expect them to let them reign, especially if it's the main event. The one thing NXT TV has done consistently week by week is produce a great TV main event.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a lot of the point of In Your House was to get to that ending where Regal's just like, I can't, you know, control these people anymore.
Yep.
I need to make some changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that got people talking all of Monday and then all of Tuesday.
Yep. And he got himself a really good enforcer and the name Samoa Joe. I don't have to really talk about how happy I am to see Joe back. And really in a spot that's going to be awesome for him because... if you're not going to push him into the main event on Raw or SmackDown, then make him a focal point of NXT television. That's what he's going to be as this Stone Cold like enforcer. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it seems pretty clear that he probably went to a couple other places and tried to get cleared and just couldn't. Otherwise, he'd probably be wrestling there.
Yeah,
I would imagine. I agree. But this is fine for him. You know, maybe somewhere down the line you get cleared. I mean, never say never. It's happened with other people. But, you know, to see him on TV every week and, you know, let him
do what he does best.
Do the Kohina Clutch, you know, 10 minutes into
his... Strike the fear of God into people. That's what he does best. Let him do what he does the best and just strike the fear of God into the NXT roster.
He also made Karrion Kross look like a bitch.
Oh.
Just a theme of the program now.
Yes. Except he's a man that can actually make you look like a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You got Finn Balor, Adam Cole, baby. Did he have a segment with Pete Dunne?
Yeah, Dunne. Well,
Dunne made him look like a bitch. Kyle O'Reilly made him look like a bitch.
Gargano even made him look like a bitch, too.
The goofy-ass Johnny Gargano made you look like a bitch, bro.
Yeah.
I think it's leading on to something. But yeah, it was cool to see Samoa Joe there and, you know, really asserting his story and choking Adam Cole out. Like,
yeah,
what?
No, you know, NXT's heating up. They have this charging vignette thing that they're doing now. That'll be someone at some point.
The Diamond Mine thing is happening. I think the thing that I have enjoyed the most about NXT TV since 2021, even if I don't agree with some of the people that they're putting on TV, they are putting new people on TV and they're putting them in positions to hopefully succeed.
Yeah. I mean, we got Blake Christian this week.
Yeah. And the week prior we had Carmelo Hayes, Christian Casanova. And you know, they put obviously the new women on there as well. They're doing the Diamond Mine thing next week. We'll see what that's about. Yeah. Like you said, the charger, whatever that's related to is something led into. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, they're trying to, it seems like they're definitely in transition, like with WWE, the main roster, where everything's a little stagnant. I think NXT is a little further ahead in that department, but we'll see what happens this summer.
Yeah.
It could be really fascinating if everything is pulled off without a hitch.
Yeah, and you know what, I did think that Samoa Joe would go to Impact, like at least just for Slammiversary and face Kenny. And now they're doing Kenny against Sami Callihan. So y'all have fun with that. But yeah, no, it's exciting to see him back. I'm glad Regal's not leaving too, because I like William Regal quite a bit.
Yeah, it's good to see William Regal still there. Yeah, I'm very happy to see Regal. And then I think that's going to be a good dynamic. We've always, you know, something about Regal, I don't know if it's just his the respect you have for him as a wrestler, but he comes off as a wonderful authority figure, you know?
Yeah.
And to continue to have that, but then also give him a right-hand man, like, I don't think if we would have just had Samoa Joe come in and be the general manager that, you know, he would be as believable when it came to decision-making. And, okay, yeah, it's pro wrestling. But you do want an authority figure that you can see as an authority figure, as somebody that can authorize over a workplace. So I really do like that. There was a debut on Monday Night Raw. Eve Marie is back by popular demand. She took on Naomi, which was a very, very... I'm so glad they got that out of the way early. So they let you know it was coming. So we only got like a sliver of the think pieces and the Naomi deserves better hashtags that are finding ways to persist.
It was great because Jimmy Smith was like, oh, you know, Naomi's been trending all day since this was announced. I'm like, yeah, you don't want to really bring that up, man.
Sure you do.
you kind of do. Like, yeah. You know, lean into the stupidity of wrestling Twitter, as I would say. Of course, Naomi deserves better, but like people should have known. People just do the fucking most. Be doing the fucking most. And then Eva Marie picked up the win her first match back. Only she didn't lay a hand on Naomi. It was all Piper Niven making her Monday Night Raw main roster debut. That was a shock to me that it was going to be Piper Niven to be the muscle for Eva Marie. I didn't see her coming in, but I love it. She just got back from NXT UK. And I would assume she would have been on NXT television to start. But no, I think that's awesome that we get to see Piper on Monday nights now.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's going to be a good partnership. You know, everyone was so mad, you know, Eva shouldn't be wrestling, and then she doesn't wrestle, and then people are still mad. Like, oh, you know, you didn't even give Piper a name, and that's the point.
Well, yeah, exactly. But and also, it's for someone as physically imposing and as physically dominant as Piper looks, it's better to sell this as a, oh, who's this mammoth, you know, coming down to the ring and destroying a former women's champion in Naomi. Like, it's better to sell it that way.
Yes, 100%.
And also, like, not for nothing, everyone makes jokes about how no one watches NXT UK, but suddenly, you know, you have to name her by her name on NXT UK.
Oh, she was in the Mae Young Classic. Like, people don't fucking know her from the Mae Young Classic. People don't know her from NXT UK. If you're just the regular Monday Night Raw main roster viewer, you don't watch NXT UK. You don't watch NXT. You probably watch NXT now. It's on USA. But you don't watch UK. You don't watch the Cruiserweight Classic or the Mae Young Classic. So, yeah, Piper Niven's very new to the regular viewer of Monday Night Raw. So I think it was a good thing that, you know, she comes in, she destroys Naomi, which kudos to Naomi for doing the job. Hall of Famer in every sense of the word. Not only does she destroy Naomi, now you kind of put some suspense to her. You know, I like this pairing. I like her coming in. I like her in the King Kong Bundy / Bertha Faye singlet. She's going to be a very dominant figure on Monday Night Raw. And I think that might facilitate Nia Jax moving to SmackDown, because you can't have two bigs on the same roster, I feel.
Agree. And honestly, like, with regards to the squash, I know people were unhappy about it, and I guess I don't necessarily blame them for doing that, but one, I think even though, you know, obviously they've, you know, fumbled the ball with her a few times, she'll be fine. It seems like she's been secure enough, and if she wanted to leave, she probably would have a long time ago. And also, if you're going to do a squash, you might as well have it be a situation where Naomi was preparing for Eva Marie, but got somebody else who was like twice the size of her.
To prepare for her, like, exactly. I had no idea who she was, because she doesn't watch the Mae Young Classic. She doesn't watch NXT UK. Yeah,
exactly. So I think, in that sense, I think it worked. If you're going to find an angle to, you know, make logical sense of it, Piper squashing, like, I know people were like, oh, Dana and Mandy are right there. They could have brought in a local talent or someone from the performance center. Like, it's not as effective. Nobody would have cared if she would have, you know, destroyed somebody of that nature. Like, yeah, squash matches are cool, but like at the same time, if you're trying to put somebody over effectively, you have them beat somebody of recognition and note. And unfortunately, because everyone else was tied up with something, it unfortunately had to just be Naomi. And sometimes that is just the way that it is.
That's just the way it is. Yeah, no, I agree. I understand. Now, what we are going to do, we are going to facilitate this theoretical 10-person trade between AEW and NXT. 5 going one way, 5 going the other way. I figured it'd just be easy if we all agree on 5 that will go each way rather than just naming people. Because that way we can be like, hey, you know, this one person that wants John Moxley back in WWE, it's not going to happen. It's not realistic. Why would you even throw that out there? Where do you want to start first?
I mean, should we just, like, get the obvious ones where it's probably Kenny and Roman? I mean, there's so many matches, I think, on either one that those guys can have.
You would throw Roman over to AEW.
Well,
meh. You gotta be realistic.
The trade's gotta be even though, right? Like, if you're gonna take Kenny, then
I feel like Kenny's a lot more realistic than Roman.
Okay, no, that's fine. We don't have to do those two. Where do you guys want to start then? That's fine. I mean, a guy that I would like to see in WWE is Adam Page.
Agree.
That was going to be the first one I said. The second one I was going to say from AEW. So I guess we're just starting with AEW. Second one I would say from AEW is Jungle Boy. I feel like you can do some a lot of fun shit with Jungle Boy. You have the Hollywood aspect, him being Nate Perry's son, that they can play off of.
Yeah,
he's getting a better physique. I like Jungle Boy if you were to take him from AEW and put him in NXT. I'm also saying Hikaru Shida.
Okay.
Love to see her. You guys can throw some out there if you want.
I mean, you know, Ricky Stark's the guy I'm very high on. If he was to be included,
that is a good one. I was gonna throw out Orange Cassidy, but
I don't know.
Depending on, you know, WWE is just going to WWE the hell out of his gimmick.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know that his act would play as well in WWE because they'd try and fix it
up on it.
Yeah.
Well, if you pick Shida, who's more, ready right now, I will go with somebody who's still kind of, getting themselves better, though they're hurt right now, and they're still at a young age. I'll throw Anna Jay out there.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
That's a really good one. She's a really good one. I actually like that. You know what? I think Anna Jay would bang really well within, what WWE looks from their women's division. So I like that one. Let's keep Anna Jay in the chamber. I think we can all agree on Paige, right?
Yeah.
Can we all agree on Shida?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so those two spots are locked down. Shida and Adam Page are locked down. Private Party maybe, but I feel like there's just a copy of they're even more gonna stand out as a copy of Street Profits. They gotta do something entirely different. I'm all here for equity of black tag teams, but we're getting up to the limit a little bit. I was gonna say the Revival, but that's probably dead, right?
Well, let's take it easy, all right? They're still good.
I didn't say they're still good. I meant their pathway back to the Federation.
Yeah, that's fair.
As it stands right now, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Kind of running out of likable people in AEW that are still fresh.
Yeah. I mean, Miro going back would be cool.
I guess the way that his wife was talking the other day is that he was doing just jumping jacks when he got let go. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I would love to see him back, but they got to actually do something with him.
Can we put Pac back there?
He'd be good.
See, that's my thing too, is he realistic too? Because did he burn that bridge?
That's a good question. Okay. Ortiz and Santana?
That's actually a really good one. I would love to see them in the tag team division. Let's include them as just one singular unit. So we got Ortiz and Santana. We got Shida, and we got Adam Page. We got two slots left. If we can't find another young, growing face, then Ricky Starks has to be that four. Is there another one like him, or can we just put Ricky Starks in?
I mean, I guess it depends how you feel about Darby.
I don't like Darby, so
yeah. He's not realistic either. He always basically pisses on them. So
yeah, I mean,
Powerhouse Hobbs.
I don't know who they are.
He's pretty good. He's in Team Taz.
Yeah, he's in Team.
Oh, he's one person. I thought that was a tag team.
No, yeah, no.
Powerhouse Hobbs. Okay.
I mean, Wardlow is a guy who is very big and could do cool things in WWE, I think.
How about this? Let's put Ricky Starks in as four. We got to decide on five. Five being between Orange Cassidy, Anna Jay, Wardlow, and then give me a fourth.
Let's see here. I don't think Eddie Kingston is realistic.
I would like Kingston, but I don't see it.
Yeah. Let's...
I love that nobody threw out Sammy Guevara. Good job. Good job.
I think really either one of Penta or Phoenix would be good.
Yeah.
As well.
Oof. Okay, let's just do this. Penta, Phoenix, Wardlow, Anna Jay, Orange Cassidy. I forgot the other one I named, but between those, we got one spot left. I'm just gonna say Anna Jay just because I think she fits the mold of what WWE would go for.
Agree.
Yeah. No, that's fair. We can go with that.
Okay. So Anna Jay, Santana Ortiz, Ricky Starks, Hikaru Shida, and Adam Page moving over to WWE. Now it should be a lot easier. WWE folks going over to AEW. And again, we're hoping for, we want some realism. So like, you know, Drew McIntyre is probably not going to go. AJ Styles in a couple years, maybe. Not right now. I probably think about this often. I think Dolph Ziggler is somebody that would work in AEW. I just don't know what the fuck you would call him. He's not going to be Dolph Ziggler in AEW.
You could probably just use his real name because his brother wrestles there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. The Nemeth brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could put him and Rude over there, and I think they'd fit pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a second. That's another good name is Robert Rude.
Doing kind of what FTR does now. Yeah.
I'll say Cedric Alexander.
He'd be good.
I think that's a realistic option just from the perspective of they keep stop starting him, and if he left, I would not blame him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. Ricochet, I also wouldn't blame him if he went over to AEW.
I will go down to NXT. I will say Ember Moon. Mm-hmm. Just from the perspective of I think that at this point, she's probably going to be in NXT for a really long time. I don't see an opening for her on the main roster. And I think that it's not going to work for her up there. So if she went over there, I think that would be, you know, something that would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, like Roderick Strong at this point, you could include because who knows where he is.
Maybe he's the one for the Charger vignette.
Yeah, no, he could be. I think, you know, if you want to look at the women,
that's where I was trying to get down, trying to think of some women that could probably.
That's where it gets a little tough because for as much as everyone gives some shit for it, like most of these women are at least doing something at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't picture anyone besides, like I said, besides Ember of being like, oh yeah, they're a better fit elsewhere.
Maybe Nikki Cross if what she's doing now doesn't pan out.
Yeah, maybe her too.
Maybe like Aaliyah because she's been there for so long and they haven't done anything with her.
I was almost gonna say, you know what, we should throw Aaliyah in there because maybe Aaliyah can pull a Tanera Conti, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden find herself. Just to get one out of the way, and of course there's a few that I think are really good. Let's do Rude and Ziggler as a tag team.
Okay.
And then let's do Aaliyah with the hope that she is going to have a Tenera Conti kind of growth in AEW. We threw out a lot of names. We got to get three slots.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, we didn't say his name, but I think, you know, you could see Shinsuke going there at some point. I know.
I would agree.
You know, I think Jeff Hardy's a guy that you could see going there at some point for obvious reasons. I think he's still got another year or whatever left on his deal.
You know what? Let's throw Jeff in there so people can finally shut the fuck up about how WWE is mistreating Jeff.
Here's my thing with Jeff is, you know, if he does go over there, so he works like a main event or a match with Matt against the Young Bucks, which they did, you know, the day before they returned at WrestleMania. And then maybe something with Darby because people compare them all the time. And then what do you do with him after?
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, I think maybe Ali is a guy that you could put on that list just because he seems kind of frustrated sometimes.
Let's. I think Ali is a good third that we can, you know, put immediately on AEW and he's going to matter. And I think this frustration that we've seen from him on camera, on Twitter for the last couple of years is going to blow over perfectly in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Could we agree on Ali?
Yes.
Ali, you're going to AEW. Got some good names. I threw out Ricochet earlier. Is there any kind of hope that he's going to even be the mid-card guy that we know he can be?
I mean, he was feuding with Sheamus like 3 weeks ago, right?
I feel like that was a half-hearted. I feel like that was a half-hearted thing. Like
he had the one. He replaced, who did he replace when he wrestled in like Umberto. Street clothes? Yeah. He wrestled for the U.S. title in street clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. Fine. We'll keep him on WWE television for now.
Actually, you know what the thing is about Ricochet? I don't know if you watched the 24 or whatever they did about him. He's just like, he seems happy to be there, even like with the Brock stuff and with, you know, everything that they've done. He seems like he's just one of those guys that it just enjoys being there.
Yeah, I did get that sense from it. I mean, time does change things.
Hmm. So Akira Tozawa. Sure. That works too.
That's a good one. It's just, I don't know. I like Shinsuke a lot more as like having a being a major focus of if I'm gonna do Akira Tozawa, then let's put him on the Japanese tour of New Japan when we get that partnership started. I feel like Shinsuke might play over better in AEW.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I can see that.
So you want to do Shinsuke number four? Holy shit, the Sixers gave up this lead.
Okay. Yeah, it's a one possession game now.
Oh my god.
We're up 28.
Dude, I was like, I'm waiting for a timeout so I can take the Atlanta plus 14 and a half, and like now it's a 2-point game. What the fuck? Can we put Shinsuke on there?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Shinsuke is a fourth, and number five, I think Ember Moon is probably could go over to the AEW women's division and kill Shinsuke.
Yeah.
So let's do her too. All right. That's who we're sending from WWE to AEW. That's who we're sending from AEW to WWE. Now let's go back in time as we watch the Sixers blow another one. Let's go back to the year 2005. Sixers and the Hawks weren't very good this year, by the way, of course. But we're just coming off the first week of the WWE draft. John Cena made his trumpet return, or trumpet debut, I guess, on Monday Night Raw. And Chris Benoit made a comeback to SmackDown. We also had ECW One Night Stand. Legendary pay-per-view. If you have not seen it, go find a version that's not on the WWE Network and then thank us later. So we got the fallout of that also happening on Monday Night Raw and Thursday Night SmackDown, which we go to Fridays, I believe.
September.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They start making All a right. big deal out of it sometime soon. I don't remember when, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to give you a refresher here on what's going on in the world in June 2005. Top five movies in America this week. Number five was The Longest Yard. Number four was Revenge of the Sith. Number three was Madagascar. Number two was Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which of course was number one last week. And debuting at number one this week, making a whopping $48.745 million, is Batman Begins.
Yep, I was there day one. And I, truthfully, I wasn't a person who loved Batman Begins until like the last couple of years. You know, maybe it had to take other origin stories and me loving other origin stories to really, you know, start to fall in love with Batman Begins. But great fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
Who's my man? So played Ra's. Fuck, I keep forgetting his name. Buddy who likes to attack black people in broad daylight. I keep freaking forgetting his name. Qui-Gon Jinn. Oh, whatever. He was awesome as
Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson. There we go. I was going to say Nielsen. Yeah. What the fuck? Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson was great as Ra's al Ghul. Christian Bale isn't everyone's favorite Batman, but if I had to rank them, he'd probably be no lower than third. Like I think he did a solid job.
Agree.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought that you couldn't get worse than Katie Holmes, but Somehow you did. Anyway, really good movie. Really good movie.
The number
eventually of- we'll have, I think next month is when we have Bad News Bears somewhere on this list.
Yes, yeah. I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. Top five songs in America, they're the same. Just a little bit moved up to number three, and O moved down to number four. Also in the news on this day, which will be relevant, I guess, for Raw for unsavory reasons, is the fact that a jury determined that in the Michael Jackson molestation case that he was ruled not guilty.
Yeah, I peeped that just randomly. I'm like, oh shit, that did happen in the summer of 05. Mm-hmm. I remember being home that day. And, you know, obviously cut into every single news channel or every single station that you got locally. That was a big fucking case. Like,
yeah.
Because I don't think the first one in the 90s really went to trial. Like, this was, you know, if there's any sign of how much people love Michael Jackson, the day that he passed away, and it didn't hit me until I got on the bus from my little summer job to go back home, and somebody came on the bus and just screamed, Michael Jackson is dead, and I had, like, old ladies falling out on the floor of this fucking bus because Michael Jackson died. And so, you know, having that was just it was the biggest thing going on. It had everybody in vice grip, and, you know, I'm not going to say one way or another about the not guilty verdict, but, you know, if there's anybody who superseded Earth in time, it was Michael Jackson. It was people's love for Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a crazy ass day. And I did think that was very vile that, like, a writer thought, hey, I'm going to be edgy and put a Michael Jackson getting off of a molestation case joke in the show. That's going to go over well.
Yeah. Well, there are several.
Yeah, because it was like, you know, Jerry Lawler talked about it. So I'm like, whatever, I'll just ignore it. And Kurt Angle brings it back up later. And I'm like,
yeah, that was what are you doing? You're already a creep.
What are we doing here?
Yeah. Come on. But yeah, I mean, we do have a few things about the fallout from One Night Stand, in particular, JBL beating up Blue Meanie. apparently, Blue Meanie said some stuff online about JBL hazing him,
yep,
if you can believe that, when he was in the WWF. And JBL, I guess, took that time to kind of retaliate. And that'll,
yep,
end up being a thing that they work into the show in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so, it will be.
You know, there were a couple altercations backstage early on at One Night Stand, like Dawn Marie and Francine. And but then basically Vince and Laurinaitis told everyone, just put everything aside for one night. And pretty much from there, everyone did.
What the fuck did Dawn and Francine got going on?
I mean, I guess that heat when they were in ECW.
Yep.
And it just...
It's good to see you're still as pleasant as ever, bitch.
Yeah, never went away. And then everyone behaved until... JBL didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And kind of like we thought, you know, Paul Heyman was doing most of the booking and fought with Vince over a bunch of stuff, like having Taz come out after Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Then Vince was that gorilla, but Heyman was right next to him all night. Kind of like we talked about last week, Jericho used some moves that he didn't use in WWE because he wanted to do something different. And I didn't catch them booing the 619, but
they did.
We're not happy.
Yeah, with the 619. They did. Mm-hmm. This is beginning the weird time where the Smarks were anti-Ray, which,
well, also,
may they all burn in hell.
I also forgot. I know, you know, the Ray Psychosis match wasn't very good. I forgot Ray did sprain his ankle a couple weeks ago. We talked about that. You know, Vince had no problem with RVD's promo, which is good. Matt Hardy and Lita are not in regular communication these days, that their attempts at reconciliation derailed once he participated in the on-air exploitation of their real-life breakup.
Hmm.
Any chance of Edge and Hardy talking out their issues also appears to be delayed, I mean, until there's money to be made.
Exactly.
Matt Hardy talked about the Matt Hardy show that, I guess, ended up, like, being on his website.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing.
Yeah.
In my, this is the beginning of me being an internet wrestling fan.
Yeah.
I signed up to a forum the night of One Night Stand.
Yeah.
And from then on, we're off to the races.
Samoa Joe signed with TNA, even though TNA's in some trouble right now because WGN turned them down.
Yep.
So they need to get a TV
deal. They are still doing the webcasts.
Well, WGN turned them down because they were like insisting on doing Monday nights, and WGN didn't think that was a good idea.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely not. Like, they're being too big for their britches.
Also, the other thing about WGN is they still had like.
Oh, they had a ton of stuff. Yeah,
they had the Cubs and White Sox and Bulls still at that point. They didn't have the Blackhawks, but
yeah, because like, this was before the WGN America stuff, right?
Yeah. So locally, the Superstation existed, but
the show that Superstars eventually got on.
Yeah, but I find it hard to believe they would have moved a Cubs or White Sox game on a Monday night in Chicago,
yeah.
That's a big area you get taken.
Yeah,
for.
Exactly. And this is also, of course, a week before Slammiversary.
Yeah. But yeah, Samoa Joe's there. That's good. And then Undertaker is expected back in a few weeks, but right now there's no specific date. Well, yeah, but now we can get into Raw.
From Binghamton.
Such a dumb way to follow up, like a red hot pay-per-view. You're going to go to Binghamton? Like,
well, it's 1995. They stayed local.
You're in New York. Run the Nassau Coliseum. No maybe one's it was, using it in June.
Maybe it was booked.
It's June.
Maybe they had a concert.
Way to shit on the Islanders, man.
Well, hey, the Islanders might win the Stanley Cup this year. Are they still
they're facing the Lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vegas is facing Montreal, which is throwing you off, but then I remember that they basically did away with the conferences or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're down 0-2 right now, so they need to pick up the fucking pace. It's Montreal. That was a really good rib, though. Yeah, Binghamton, it's whatever. They got lucky because they got Stone Cold right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Stone Cold's here to start the evening. He's happy to be in front of all of his fans. Received a call because Muhammad Hassan said he'd been screwed by the system, and Stone Cold wants to solve the issue and lay out some justice. It'll be an unbiased party. Hassan and Daivari come out, and Stone Cold immediately says something Islamophobic.
Austin's had a really poor month when it comes to race relations.
Yeah. Austin won't shake his hand because he doesn't like him. And Muhammad Hassan says that he's biased, and Austin says that he isn't, even though Austin literally just said he didn't like him. they play a video of all the times Hassan has been wronged, and Austin thinks that he's a piece of garbage, but after watching the footage, he has a point, so he gets a match with Shelton Benjamin right now.
Also, for what it's worth, Nassau Coliseum was not booked that night, but the following month, on July 13th, they had a concert with Taking Back Sunday and Weezer.
My God.
2005 alt rock you get, man.
2005 Weezer, that's when Beverly Hills came out.
Yeah,
right? That's
yeah.
It was everywhere.
Same year as Beverly Hills, and I think it's the same year as Make Damn Sure for Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah, so, also, I'm sorry, it was actually the Make Believe Tour with Weezer, Taking Back Sunday, and The Fray.
Oh, yeah.
That is a 2005 ass concert.
Okay, but like that was The Fray before they became The Fray too.
Oh yeah,
because like, I don't think How to Save a Life comes out for another year or two, and then it takes over fucking all of easy rock radio. Shout out to the light back home.
So Stone Cold stays at ringside.
By the way, Philly's about to fuck this one, and I am overjoyed to watch another team fuck up a playoff spot.
God. Hassan gets a chair, but Austin takes it from him. Daivari hits a low blow, but the ref doesn't see it. And then Austin gets involved with the disqualification. Daivari gets stunned, and Stone Cold and Shelton drink beers. And I mean, I don't know.
It was kind of silly.
It wasn't good. Like, I didn't include it, but in the Observer, you know, Dave was like, if you're going to bring Stone Cold in, have him come in for something more important than this, which I get it. Yeah.
I mean, also, he didn't really like do his like whole shtick either.
No. And like, you know, I get
they're pretty subdued with
it. You're in Binghamton, you know, it's the summer, you want people to tune in, but you know, they got John Cena's first match on the show, they got another draft pick, you know, Sergeant Slaughter comes in, they didn't need Stone Cold.
They really didn't, no. I get it, but they really didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
So Coach wanted to apologize to Bischoff about last night, however, he said that he never wanted to discuss it again. Jericho came in, and he's irritated that Christian is the number one contender to John Cena's WWE Championship. So basically he says that he's going to kick Christian's ass and try to prove that he's the contender. And on his way out, he runs into Triple H. They have an awkward encounter, and Triple H, says that he's heard rumors. The new draft pick can come say whatever they want to Batista tonight. Bischoff said that that's correct. Triple H is very mad about that. And he says that he better not impact the Hell in a Cell match at all. So then Chris Masters comes out for the Master Lock Challenge, which is up to $11,000 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergeant Slaughter came out. He does not care about the Master Lock, but can Chris Masters break the Cobra Clutch? Slaughter gets it locked in. Masters is able to hit a low blow, locked in the Master Lock, and Slaughter passed out.
Yes.
So there we have it. And then we move on to John Cena's in-ring debut on Monday Night Raw, where he is teaming with Chris Jericho against the team of Christian and Tyson Tomko. Jericho, again, very irritated. Cena came in, hit the FU on Tomko for the win. But then Jericho attacked him from behind.
Yeah. He put him in the walls of Jericho on the floor and looked at the title. And then after the break, Bischoff added Jericho to the Christian-Cena match.
Yes, and then Cena beat Jericho's ass backstage.
Yes. We're down to 8 finalists in the new Diva Search. They will be here starting next week. That's unfortunate.
Hmm. Ashley Massaro's cool.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't remember who else is in that Diva Search, though.
I think Crystal.
I think you might be right. What's that so sense?
Crystal who?
Crystal Marshall.
Oh, yeah, the one.
Right. Yeah, I think she's in this one, too. I had a name, but I forgot it.
Oh, it's Layla's in it as well.
Oh yeah.
No, Layla L's next year.
No, she's in 05. Oh, I'm sorry, Layla Milan. You're right.
That was Layla Milan. Yeah. I was trying to remember her name, but I forgot all about Layla Milan.
Yep.
That's one of the women who I was thinking of. Yeah, I think that's the only three who wrestling fans would really remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Layla was only on for couple of months. She was rarely featured from what I remember.
Yeah. Viscera's here. He came out with Lillian, got the win over Maven and left with Lillian. So, they're doing their thing now.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. Triple H tells Ric Flair that if John Cena can be drafted, anyone can be drafted. So him and Flair have to put an end to this and need to go out there. Whoever the new draft pick is, they have to send a message to him.
There was actually someone else I remembered. She didn't make it to the top 25, but remember Raka Khan from TNA?
Mm. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yes. She was also in that one. Born in Champaign, high school in Jacksonville. Gross. Illinois Central College. So basketball player, I believe. Is what she was. So but yeah, didn't make the top 25, didn't make the top 8.
Let's see here. So then we move on to Kane against Sylvain Grenier. Kane hits multiple choke slams. He's back. He's not sad that his wife left him anymore. You know, ready to get after it again. Lita comes out. Lita has two important announcements. She calls Snitsky out.
Says back on the scene. You think Kane wears like one of those button-down shirts when he goes out to the club?
I mean, you've seen how he dresses now as the mayor. Yeah. I mean, you know,
like when he went out with the boys, they go to the strip club. He's the one in the button up with the jeans, looking like a 7-foot Jim Halpert. Yeah, he definitely looks like that kind of guy.
Lita calls Snitsky out and says what happened to the baby wasn't his fault, it was Kane's fault. Then she kissed him, and then Edge came out and they're getting married next week, and Kane is invited. We love a wedding,
we sure do.
It's good stuff.
So to end the show, Triple H and Ric Flair head to the ring. He talked for a while before it was finally time to reveal the new draft pick. And it's Kurt Angle. This, of course, is a big deal in the perspective of Kurt Angle has not been on Raw in 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, he will, for unfortunate reasons, have to jump back to SmackDown later in the year.
Yes.
Between Eddie and, I believe, Batista's injury plays a part. They just need a star.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, Kurt Angle's back.
Yeah, Angle is back.
Great first guy to put him back in there since we haven't seen Angle or Triple H in a ring together in those 3 years. So mm-hmm. Nice way to pick back up with Kurt. And unfortunately, they wouldn't really, I don't think they locked up at all unless they locked up in these first couple months. I don't think they locked up at all when they...
No, because
Triple H is about to leave.
Yeah, Triple H is about to leave after Hell in a Cell and... When he comes back in Raw Homecoming, you know, Angle's tied up with the Michaels Iron Man match.
He does something else after. I think he's doing Michaels, but he's also still working Cena.
Yeah, he's still working Cena.
They carry the Cena thing until Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm. They They are on opposite sides at Saturday night's main event next year in Detroit.
Yes, in the WrestleMania main event 3-on-2 handicap match. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then they're on the same team at Survivor Series 2017, and then on opposite sides at WrestleMania 34.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, like, as like in their prime, like not.
But yeah, no.
Not post Perk Angle.
Yeah.
No, and they really only had like a few singles match. I mean, they had, you know, a handful after Triple H came back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, from like 2002 onward, they didn't wrestle a whole ton.
No, they didn't. So Kurt said that if anyone was jumping from SmackDown to Raw, they'd take a backseat to Triple H. However, Kurt will not. We had the woo-off between Kurt and Flair, which is a great moment.
Those two are going to wrestle in a few weeks, and it's going to be very good.
Yes. Yes, they are. Triple H said that he calls the shots, and Kurt said that the last time he saw him at WrestleMania was when Kurt made Shawn Michaels tapped out, and Triple H got his ass kicked by Batista. And there are some unsavory remarks made about Stephanie, and Triple H basically, you know, laughed it off. And then Angle says, "What happened to Michael Jackson today is nothing compared to what I got away with when I was making out with your wife behind your back."
Wow. Wow.
Not good. Can't say that.
Somebody put on Twitter, "The gang blows a 26-point lead." That's perfect. I can hear the song playing in my head. It's so perfect.
Angle's been watching Batista, and he sees how the crowd cheers for him, and Kurt's impressed, but he's not that impressed. Kurt's a real champion and a gold medalist. He knows he can't make any title matches, but he'd like to have a match with Batista the night after Vengeance on Raw. Kurt says Batista will choke against him, and then Batista comes out. Says that he wouldn't talk about choking if he were Kurt after, you know, what happened at ECW One Night Stand. Triple H says, why wait till after Vengeance? Why not have Angle and Batista face next week? Because Triple H wants Kurt to soften him up.
Exactly. So Batista says that he sees what he's doing, that he's full of shit.
But he agrees to it anyway.
And then we hear the music of Shawn Michaels after Kurt basically says that he's, you know, ready, waiting for whatever happens after Vengeance. And Michaels says that he noticed that Kurt doesn't have a dance partner for Vengeance. So why not have a WrestleMania rematch?
Yeah.
And then everyone brawls with each other to end the show.
Yeah.
Quite enjoyed this segment.
That's a good segment.
I quite enjoyed it. This was the brightest spot on this Raw.
Also, Triple H and Kurt Angle just incredibly sweaty through shirts. Just disgusting.
We've been under those lights before. We know how freaking hot.
But like Sean Miller level.
Oh, yeah.
It's bad.
It's bad. It is very bad.
Yeah. We got the basketball.
Yes, we do. We have basketball and a couple of other things to discuss and banter about. So once again, as always, we will be talking about things that happened only through June 19th, which is good because that's when Game 5 is. So when we last left, the Spurs had a 2-0 lead, and now Game 3 was won by the Pistons, 96-79. The Pistons then won Game 4, 102-71. And then Game 5 was won by the Spurs, 96-95 in overtime. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was the Robert Horry game. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Pistons come back, win Game 6, and then one of the greatest Game 7s.
Yes.
Game 7 right there. This was a wonderful series. Wonderful back and forth series. Got a defending champion. Got the team that won 2 years ago. It was truly like the clash of the two best teams in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to get this out of the way. People are just like, oh, why is Ben Wallace going into the Hall of Fame? Like, check the resume. Check. It felt like one of those you had to be there kind of careers. You know, if you were not around to see how Ben Wallace led that Detroit Pistons staff, like, you don't understand his greatness. And he's going in there toe to toe with Tim Duncan, who is the best player in the league at this point. Mm-hmm. People like to forget, you know, because they think, oh, we transitioned from Jordan immediately to Shaq, immediately into Kobe, and then LeBron. And then we skip over the time period of, I want to say, from the start of the 2002-03 season on to 2006-07, when the best player in the NBA was Tim Duncan. Like, bar fucking none. So, like, yeah, this is you know, Ben Wallace and elite Tim Duncan and all the role players on both sides. I believe this was Larry Brown's last year with the Detroit going up against Pop. It was an awesome series.
Mm-hmm. All right. So a day later, in the world of track and field, Asafa Powell of Jamaica set a new world record in the 100 meter dash by running 9.77 at the Athens Olympic Stadium. So we had that going on. In addition to that, on Sunday, I'm just seeing some notably kind of funny things here. First of all, not so funny, but Michael Campbell of New Zealand won the 2005 U.S. Open with a score of even par, which was two strokes better than Tiger Woods. The 05 U.S. Open was, I wonder where that was. 2005 U.S. Open golf. Let's see. That was at Pinehurst. Yeah. So yeah, very gross. In addition to that, so this is actually kind of funny. So in the world of Formula One, so at the start of the U.S. Grand Prix race in the 2005 season, all cars using Michelin tires pulled out of the race because of safety concerns. Michael Schumacher won. Rubens Barrichello finished second, and Thiago Monteiro finished third. A happy Monteiro was the only one who sprayed champagne on the podium, and apparently some angry fans vented frustration by hurtling bottles and other forms of trash onto the circuit.
God.
Also, apparently Greg Biffle won the Batman Begins 400. Yes, the Batman Begins 400 at the Michigan International Speedway that day, too.
Hell yeah.
He's won the last two races at that track. And then in the world of baseball, a couple of notable things happened this week in 2005. The Red Sox paid tribute to Carlton Fisk and his Game 6 walk-off homer because they were playing the Reds, who had not played at Fenway since the 75 World Series. They named the bright yellow stanchion in left field where the ball landed the Fisk foul pole. In addition to that, on June 14th, we had two things happen here. Ichiro became the third fastest big leaguer to reach the 1,000 hit mark. He also, of course, had held the record in Japan for being the quickest player to attain 1,000 hits, reaching the milestone in 757 games. Also, there was an altercation between the Angels and the Nationals that started because Brandon Donnelly's glove was checked for a foreign substance, and it was discovered that there was illegal pine tar. Mm-hmm. Kind of topical.
Yeah.
You know, there was words exchanged between Mike Socha and Frank Robinson. On June 15th, George Steinbrenner announced plans for a new ballpark in the Bronx. I'm sorry to hear that. In addition to that, on June 16th, there was apparently a big brawl in a minor league game between Richmond Braves flycatcher Essex Sneed, who pummeled David Bush. I don't remember that.
Well, I guess with the Yankees in the stadium, are you happy they stayed in the Bronx? Because they were going to the like East River area or whatever for a long time, and that never got off the ground.
I mean, I guess, but in a way, it's just like that stadium was just so much better.
Yeah.
The new one is just so soulless.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyways, also that week, the Diamondbacks became the first team since 1969 to allow 10 runs in an inning in consecutive games.
Oh my God.
Good board.
They probably do that this year too.
Yeah. The 69 Mets were the only one to accomplish the dubious feat, apparently, before that. Houston had swept a doubleheader at Shea Stadium. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, but not leastly, Julio Franco became the oldest player to hit multiple homers in a game when he was 46 years old and also 299 days. And Derek Jeter hit his one and only grand slam of his career against the Cubs.
That's not even important. Anyway, shout out to, real quick, Julio Franco. He's in his 60s and he posted a video of him in the batting cages. A couple months ago, he could still rake. So, you know, if you're a team in need of a DH, from the left side, he could still rake. And then shout out to Randy at PamSun on Twitter. He's doing the captain, the 6-part series on Derek Jeter for ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fucking rad. So congrats to him on such tremendous honor. It's gonna be wild to see how they get 6 parts out of Derek Jeter, but I'm pretty sure they're gonna be able to do it and do it justice.
Oh yeah.
Are we on the SmackDown now?
Yes. From Hershey.
Yeah, the Giants.
That big ass Hershey bar that man was eating.
Is the Giants Center like right next to Hershey Park?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. I've seen it. I've never been in it, but I've seen it a million times. It's literally right next to Hershey
stuff,
Park.
I mean, I know Hershey Park has like rides and stuff, but
yeah.
Is it just like the chocolate tour and that's about it?
Or? No, I mean, there's rides. You know, it's an amusement park. And, you know, there's stuff to, you know, go see and whatnot. And Chocolate World is, you know, it's great. They have a bunch of souvenirs and a lot of candy, obviously. Yeah. I always enjoyed going to Hershey.
JBL is in the ring to open the show with the cabinet. Finally got the stench of ECW off his body. congratulates him on a successful show, but it was only successful because he was there. The ECW people will never be superstars, never be SmackDown superstars, because JBL is the only SmackDown superstar. And the UPN executives pray that he doesn't get drafted because he equals ratings and money. Eventually, Chris Benoit just comes out and we get right into Chris Benoit against Doug Basham. Benoit gets pinned with a roll up, and then the cabinet come in and beat him up. And JBL tells Benoit that he's Mr. SmackDown, he's a wrestling god. And the lights go out, and The Undertaker's back.
He is.
That's fun. We haven't seen him in a while.
We have not seen him since Mania.
We move to Eddie Guerrero against Paul London. Eddie puts him in the clover leaf, and London taps, but Eddie's not breaking the hold. So Ray comes out with a chair and starts hitting Eddie with it. They brawl to the back, keep brawling after the commercial, and they end up in the back of a truck. And then Ray hits the button to close the back, but Eddie escapes, and Ray kind of trapped himself in the back of the truck. Not great.
Idiot Ray.
Orlando Jordan tells the Bashams to come to the ring with him as he faces Hardcore Holly later, but JBL says no, because he needs them, because he's facing The Undertaker later in a no disqualification match.
But there's a problem here, and that's that the Bashams don't want to do any of that, because they're tired of being crash test dummies, so they quit.
I mean, they probably should have just went along with it because they're not going to be employed much longer.
Maybe this is...
Yeah. Actually, I think they keep one of them, don't they? Maybe.
I don't remember, actually.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
So Carlito's here for Carlito's Cabana. He says that it is cool that people from Hershey have pride in their town, and it shows because they're fat and have bad skin and probably diabetes. Jesus. He introduces his guests, Booker T and Charmel. Carlito said that they seem much more relaxed tonight, seemingly because Kurt Angle was moved to Raw. Booker said that he and Charmel will miss beating the hell out of Angle. And Carlito said Charmel could be drafted to Raw without Booker, and Angle could do whatever he wanted. And Carlito says that they should enjoy their time together because everything could change soon. And he thinks that would be cool. Charmel says that this is the last time that they're together on SmackDown. Charmel wants to give Carlito something to remember him by, and Booker starts beating him up, and they threw apples at him as he retreated.
Yeah.
And then Carlito wanted to know why Matt Morgan didn't come help him, probably because he's a dumb piece of shit. And Carlito told him to stay in the back and get ready for his match with the Big Show.
Yeah.
Which is next.
Yeah, so we're running that. I put how many times are we going to do this match. This is apparently only the second time, but it's more than we need to see it. Carlito hits Big Show with the chair and gets disqualification. Then Morgan goes for the F5 through the table, but Big Show reverses it and hits a choke slam on Matt Morgan through the table. Orlando Jordan beat Hardcore Holly to retain the U.S. title. Heidenreich comes out with a large chocolate bar and reads a poem about the large chocolate bar. The Divas come out and they would like some of the large chocolate bar. Eminem come out, said there's nothing sweeter than them. And Melina makes fun of Heidenreich's poems and says that she'll never be his friend.
And that Michelle McCool is getting fat.
Yep. And they hit Heidenreich with a snapshot. So Heidenreich has some beef with the tag champions, but
he does.
Doesn't seem to have any friends.
He does not.
That's going to be interesting.
Very.
Then
we move to our main event of JBL versus
The Undertaker. That's how it starts.
Yes.
Yeah, they're gonna win the tag titles in a couple weeks.
I thought that was later in the year. God damn it.
Got to sell that Road Warrior DVD.
Exactly.
Which, hey, I mean, I bought it.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it really was.
It's time for the main event, JBL against The Undertaker in a no disqualification match. And for about 12 of the 15 minutes, they don't do anything with the no disqualification stipulation, which, you know, Undertaker goes for the last ride and JBL hits a low blow. So that finally was something. Undertaker hits the last ride and then JBL kicked out. And Undertaker got up and went for the tombstone, but Randy Orton came out and did an RKO. JBL crawled over and got the pin. And then Orton says Undertaker better get used to that because Orton is on SmackDown now. So there's your draft pick.
Indeed.
Really good that? Reveal of Orton being the pick of Raw, or pick of SmackDown, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be back fully for another month or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they'll build towards the rematch at SummerSlam. But
yeah, because if I recall, they basically rehashed the situation where Orton comes back out and he hits an RKO on The Undertaker.
Yeah.
If I recall that's what happens.
Yeah, and then they work pretty much every pay-per-view the rest of the year.
Yep.
So
that is not an exaggeration.
Feud of the fall, summer-ish, I guess. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So we got some really good superstars going back and forth in this month-long draft. We got John Cena and Kurt Angle on Raw. We got Chris Benoit and Randy Orton headed to SmackDown. So, nice little infusion. Who's our King of the Ring?
I mean, it's probably Orton or Angle, right? Probably Orton.
That's because the TV matches suck so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with Orton.
Yeah, we'll go with Randy Orton.
That's fine with me.
Yeah. That will be it for us. Let's go watch the Paul George Legacy game. I am at Cameron Santo. Chris is at Chris M. Novak. Rob is at RobMneil31. At BarbersChairNet on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/BarbersChairDigital. Patreon.com/BarbersChairNetwork. You can get the Top 25 just dropped the other day. You can get Summer Sessions episodes. You get special 40-40 Club episodes, including one that's probably going to come up this weekend because everybody's talking about fucking sticky stuff. And I'm just like, we got to have like an actual discussion on this. One that's not just, oh, you hear her dirt, you guys are cheating. So I would like that very much. That should be on tap for this weekend. You guys already know, go rate and review us 5 stars. I ain't got to tell you to go listen to our shit. Leave a comment, though. We would really appreciate that. Help shoot us up the charts. We'll be back next week where we will recap Hell in a Cell. We'll look into the near distant future and figure out who's going to be in Money in the Bank. We also have Vengeance 2005 to witness, including a triple threat for the WWE Championship and a Hell in a Cell between Triple H and Batista. The last match, I want to say, for at least another couple years, but the last big match between the two until WrestleMania in 2019. So that will do it for us. For Chris and Rob, I am Pierce. Hope to see you guys next week on Ruthless Aggression. Thank you.